Yoga Vashishtha, Part 1 by Swami Suryadevananda. Our approach. Following the general flow of the Yoga Vashishtha, we will focus on some important teachings and their practice. Salutations to that reality in which all the elements and all the animate and inanimate beings shine as if they have an independent existence, and in which they exist for a time, and into which they merge. Salutations to that consciousness, which is the source of the apparently distinct threefold divisions of knower, knowledge and known, seer, sight and seen, doer, doing and deed. Salutations to that bliss absolute, the ocean of bliss, which is the life of all beings, whose happiness and unfoldment is derived from the shower of spray from that ocean of bliss. Our topics today include background, examining everything, awakening, and at the crossroads. Welcome. A little about the background of the Yoga Vashishtha. The Yoga Vashishtha is not as well known a scripture as many others out there. But nonetheless, it's a mighty scripture in its content and truly unique in its delivery. It does not focus on theologies, it does not focus on explanations about things, it focuses on reality. And it focuses on the individual, on how the individual can discover his essential self. What is the nature of things out there truly? And how does one experience that? What are the impediments? So it's a scripture on yoga and it's a scripture on philosophy or Vedanta at the same time compressed together, but focusing purely on the essentials. A little bit about the background. Rama, who was a crown prince and many other qualities have been attributed to him, had finished his education and returned back to the palace. He may have been about the age of 16 or so. And on coming back, resumed his princely duties, whatever they may be. One day, he spoke to his father, who was a king, and he expressed a desire to go on a pilgrimage. My friends, a pilgrimage back then was quite different from a pilgrimage now. First thing about a pilgrimage is it was the going out in the nature of a pilgrim, which means I don't know and I would like to know, or I would like to discover, or I would like to see. Today when we go on a pilgrimage, you've got well-scripted tours, that we call them, and you go from point A to point B, hit all the highlights, get all the photographs, and for the most part, you're not even looking. You're looking into the lens of the camera, or you're smiling into the lens of the camera that somebody else is clicking for you, bundling up all these memories, and then coming back with that and saying, this is what I did. My friends, it's quite different. When they went in the old days, you went out to see things how they are, to discover things how they are. Because life was scripted enough and you had to go beyond that scripting or unscripting. So the nature of a pilgrim, and he spoke to his father, you know, father, I would like to go out on a pilgrimage. Naturally, his father, who was a king, was, a great idea. I'll send a whole retinue with you and you'll have all the comforts and you'll be well taken care of. And Rama said, no, well, I would just like to go alone. That shook up his father a little bit. And his father eventually consented, seeing no harm would come to him, and said, okay. So Rama took off and he went out for an entire year. He toured the country from length to breadth and he came back. He saw things as they were. And why was this important? Well, he was crown prince. One day he might be king. But besides that, if he was going to rule and perform his duties, it was important for him to see things as they are and be able to do them correctly, not just so that the duty was done correctly, but so that he was correct while doing them, or increasing his correctness or goodness or movement to the truth, call it whatever you may. And so after a year, he comes back to his palace and he was welcomed back. But gradually, a train of thought overtook him and he became pensive or withdrawn or a little bit indrawn from things as he was still examining things, digesting what he had seen. And life as it was made out to be before the pilgrimage did not seem to sync with what he had seen, what he had been told in his education and childhood by his teachers and parents. You know, we are told a whole bunch of things. And what he had seen, therefore known for himself, were two different things. He saw poverty, he saw old age, he saw suffering, he saw unhappiness, he saw happiness, he saw joy, he saw sorrow, he saw hunger, he saw all these different things. And he came back knowing that all these things, just as they were the condition of others, could be his condition too. Because conditions come, and there's no telling when they come and to whom they come. And as he saw these things, he saw the suffering, and he came back and he began to examine things. He examined his desires, his childhood, his growing up, being indulged in these things, becoming a little more susceptible to cravings and things of that kind. And he had seen cravings as the root of suffering. He had seen a lot of things as not so good. And when he came back, those were the things that he saw were commonly indulged in, and he wondered why life was lived in an unexamined way. He began examining everything and seeing through things, not developing a hatred for it or an aversion for it, but rather seeing things for what they were. We elevate things and make a bubble out of things, and when that bubble bursts, it seems a heart has bursted. But there is no heart bursting, it's a bubble bursting. We elevate a person to a certain status. This person is wonderful. They give me joy. And one day when that person just behaves a little different, we're all shook up about things. So Rama had come to a state where he had deflated the inflated value in things, and he began seeing things as they were. Childhood, what it was, a path frailed with all kinds of vulnerabilities. Then the teenage years and the middle years and indulgence and what that does. And then old age, when one doesn't have the power to do things or the stamina and energy to do what they need to, and how one becomes sort of helpless again. And he knew that there was wealth, but wealth is not there to stay with anybody, and wealth is not a solution to the problems of man. There has to be something more universal, more permanent. And so he began a little withdrawn and apathetic. Apathetic doesn't mean he hated things, but the false inflated sympathy that he had towards things, people, the false values, that bubble was burst. He began seeing things as they were, for what they were. And this misguided sympathy that he may have had was pulled, and that is called apathy, to look at things as they were, as they happen, from in the moment. And that was the situation when he came back. And one day, a great saint visited his father's court, and he asked him for a favor for which he needed Rama's help. His father sent for Rama, and the chamberlain or the guard of Rama's chambers informed his father that this is Rama's condition. His father was shocked. What has happened? Why is my son dejected? Well, Rama was not dejected. There is a difference between being pensive, withdrawn, thoughtful, where you are scrutinizing everything and being dejected. These are two different things. But they are often mistaken as the same. When someone may see you withdrawn one day, they might think you're dejected, but it's not dejection. There is no dejection or rejection any place. And so Rama was sent for, and you have these great sages, his teacher, and this great sage Vishwamitra, and all of them present in the court, and Rama appears in the court. And his father looks at him and he naturally asks, what is the reason for your dejection? And Rama says, well, I went out recently on a pilgrimage, as you know, with your blessings, and a train of thought has come over me, and in seeing things, I feel slightly different about them. And so his father asked the great sage Vishwamitra that had come there to the court to kindly answer Rama's questions or enlighten him. And this sage, seeing his teacher present there, Vasishtha, asked Vasishtha to enlighten him. So first Rama gives all of his observations on life. And then his teacher, Vasishtha, who was his teacher earlier, but as his secular teacher who had taught him princely duties and princely things, now is asked as a spiritual teacher to enlighten him. And this is an important lesson. The same person that taught him the ways of life and the sciences and arts and all of that, rulership, what he needed to do as a king, now was being asked to answer his questions. And Rama put a state of mind in front of him. This state of mind that Rama put in front of his teacher, the great sage Vasishtha, sage of cosmic consciousness, was not shooting holes in something. He hadn't sit there and he didn't have complaints about anything, but he had examined things very intelligently, and he said, well, in childhood you're so vulnerable, and you're told to do all these things, and at the same time, you're unable to really express yourself, so you've got to digest it, because what you say has no meaning. You just don't have the repertoire, language, or the means to express yourself and what you feel. And things are told to you that this is how things are, and this is what your response to them should be. And then as you grow older, you see all the indulgences and everybody else indulging, and you feel to indulge, but that may not be the best thing for you. This is while you are growing, while you are studying, and things of that kind. And then when you get into your career or your work, these are what is expected from you. This is what is successful, that is what is that. But there is an urge from within. And that urge goes unexamined or ignored. Being able to fulfill the needs of your career. For instance, we get out of school or our college or our education, and right after that, the person gets into his career almost back to back. In school, there are expectations to get the grade. This is what you have to do. Regardless of what your thoughts and feelings are, this is what is expected. And then at work, this is what is expected to get ahead. And it may include the politics, it may include everything else that comes along with your profession, but that is what is expected for you to make the mark. In society, this is what is expected from you to be accepted and maybe lauded by others. So this is what is expected, and that is what is delivered. And anything short of that, there is a sort of pushback from society, a pushback from your career, and in that pushback, you find yourself in that unsuccessful or rejected category. So this was, as Rama examined things, he saw things as they were. But to live in accordance with things as they were, or your examination, may not exactly cut it as success in family life, in careers, and things like that. So examined life, the cost of living an examined life or living on that examination, and the cost of what we call today playing the game. As people say, well, I go to work, I punch my card, I play my game, I do what is expected. And there's nothing wrong with that, that you should not do what is expected. But what about what's expected by your own self, by your inner being, by your wisdom? Well, we say, this is my work, and I do my work thing, I put on my work hat, and when I come home, I'm on my time. But see, you can't look at things that way. It's the same person that goes to work, and it's the same person that comes home, excuse me, and the same person that does your hobbies or recreation or extra activities or whatever. So how can we put on a different hat? Because beneath that hat is the same person. It's not a different person. So we can't say much my work hat like it's a work person going out there. It's the same person that was at home that goes there and that's going to sit in his prayer area or meditation area or on a beach and think of peaceful thoughts. The same person that may have thought about competitive thoughts and maybe even unpeaceful thoughts is going to come here with that same mind. It's the same mind and same heart that goes through all these different compartments. We may put a label on it that that's my work hat and think that it makes a work person or a different person. But beneath that facade, it's the same person, and that hasn't changed and it cannot change. The activity or shape of activity may change. Actually, even the activity doesn't change, but the person does not change for sure. The activity too doesn't change, because in every condition there is a situation and there is a response which challenges your inner wisdom. So the activity, doesn't matter where, even at work, there is a situation, there is a response, and your understanding or wisdom, your understanding of things. Just because the environment is an office, it doesn't change the dynamics at all. The dynamics are still the same. Your inner wisdom is being challenged. The shape or the environment may change, the decor may change, the label may change. You may be in a corporate suit, and at home you may be in comfortable clothes. But that doesn't change the fact that you're doing the same thing. There's a situation, and there's a response. This response challenges your inner wisdom or knowledge of things as they are. You may give it any other shape or any ambiance that you will, but what is going on beneath the curtain or behind the curtain stays the same. And so Rama examined everything and he began to consider, when I work or do these princely duties, this is what is expected and that is what is expected, but this is what I have seen as part of the human condition. This is what I have seen as something that comes to everybody. If I act in light of what I have seen now, it may not be accepted as well in light of what is expected of me. And if I act in light of what is expected from me, it may not sit well with my own self. It seems that either which way, I'm caught. And this was the dilemma that Rama came to in his examining of everything. So Rama had gone out on a pilgrimage, and after touring the country he had come back. And when you go out of your conditioning, you also go out on a pilgrimage, my friends. See, a pilgrimage is not just going to a holy place, but it is going with a holy attitude. First of all, let us forget the H-O-L-Y and think of whole attitude without being fragmented of a notion and ideas. To just go out in a wholesome manner and look at things every day and let it challenge your notions so your preconceptions and notions drop away. Every day you would go out with an idea or a background of holiness. You would be whole, and you would be facing the whole without any interference or parts or conditioning. When you do that and you begin seeing things, it challenges your notions of things because you see things as they are. So you come to a crossroads. After a while, it doesn't happen initially, but after a while, if I deal with things as I know them to be and as I feel best, it seems that it cost me by it not being accepted by society or my career or my work or my whatever or my relationships. It seems that it cost me at that level. If I deal with things on that level or as they are expected to be, it will cost me because I know them to be different, having awakened and being able to see things as they are. So which way do I go? I feel trapped either which way. If I go by my inner promptings, I feel trapped outwardly. And if I go by the outer expectations, I feel trapped inwardly. And most of us would say, what's so difficult in finding the middle ground? But is it possible to look at our own inner evaluation of things, our wisdom approach to things, and be able to deal with it as they are without fear of consequences? Keeping in mind that there are consequences either way. There are consequences if I deal with things as they are, as I know them to be, and there are consequences externally. Well, if I know that this person, who may be my friend or long-time acquaintance, and now as I walk the path on goodness, I see that that person has got qualities that may rub off on me, or may expect me to go along with certain things. Well, you may say that's the cost of friendship. But I'm taking a different path. I'm taking the path of goodness, and those are the things that are not conducive to the way I walk today. So what do I do? If I don't go out with that person, then that's going to break and fall. If I go out with that person, there's going to be a lot of rub off, either which way I'm caught. Well, to thine own self be true. This is the crossroads that you come at in terms of how to do and what to do. And this is the crossroads that Rama found himself in. This is what is expected of me in my princely life or as a prince. And I have seen all this. And I feel that either which way, I'm caught. We too feel the same way. Redo. We're at the crossroads now. When you examine things and you see things as they are, your own evaluation of things collides with the way things are made out to be or the way things you may have seen things earlier. And you come to this crossroads, not initially, but after a while of walking this path and examined life, you come to the crossroads where you may feel caught. If I do what is expected, it wouldn't sit right with me. Not with my hopes, but with what an examined life, with how I've seen things to be. And with how I would like to be, to promote things like my own goodness and my own closeness to the truth and everything else. And if I don't play the game, I'm caught in terms of society, career, progress, all of that. And if I play the game, I'm caught within. Either which way, it seems that I'm caught. Which way do I go? You have to be true to yourself, because it's the same person doing that, but we forget it's the same person doing that. And we think, that's my career hat, and I'll do what's expected, because that is what is expected in my career after all, and I have to have a career to support myself and do this. So the career gets superimposed over myself as a necessity to even live comfortably, quality of life, all of that gets inflated, and the the transparency of career gets put upon it as necessary, you know, in order to live, in order to do that. Well, it's not necessary to live that way. But there's a big muddle up about all this, and this needs to be sorted. Rama came to the crossroads and he felt that either which way he was caught. And he placed all these observations in front of his teacher, the great sage Vasishtha, and said, "This is what I have seen, and I can't find a way to proceed from here. So please enlighten me." In other words, please tell me how things are so I may be able to do what needs to be done. And it is at that stage, after examining things, that the words of the teacher or going to the teacher are of any use. It really isn't of much use before that. Because if you hear things before that, I got it, good idea, good thought, I'll file it in my mind and maybe be able to quote it or talk about it or discuss it with someone sometime. Good to know. But all that gets filed into ideas. It does not go from ideas into something that's living, that could live out or act out in life. And that's why we have this progression of looking at things, going out and seeing things as they are, having your own understanding of things, and then a slight collision between your direct observation of things as they are and things as they are made out to be, and how to proceed through that maze. It is at that point that the teachings, both of these great scriptures and of the teacher, becomes instrumental. And it is at that point that that one really meets the teacher. When doubt seeks clarity, there is the teacher or the teaching, which is the light in itself. And so Rama came to that point, and we all have to come to that point on our own. No, but the teacher is not going to get you to that point. Each one has got to come to that point after leading an examined life to the crossroads, where they begin examine things, have their own understanding. It seems to collide with their old understanding, and they are not sure about which way to proceed from here, seeing that they are caught either which way. So one is half awakened and half caught, or half freed and half bound. When we are at that crossroads, the great teachings and the great teachers, it is then that they become critically important. This is where Rama came, and this is where each one of us would have to come in our own journey towards the truth or higher understanding. A short summary of what we have talked about today. We looked into the background of the scripture and went over Rama's condition. The most important thing about Rama's condition, after he had an education, he ventured out a little bit. Now, we don't have a gap today between our education and between our career. But as we start living our life and our career, we have to be willing and able to examine things and see things as they are. So we are able to live in accordance with our own understanding of things and not with any preconceived notion of things. To examine things, my friend, is not to find fault with things. This is an important point. Because finding fault is the same thing as putting an inflated value. They are two opposites. Put an inflated value, this is terrific, and this is horrible. They are both notions in our mind of the same value. They are both no good to us. But to see things as they are, without letting them form a label and color our understanding later, that requires you to see things as they are, as you go along, or as you live your life. And examining things must go into an examined life, living an examined life. That is what is awakening. When you awaken, you begin staying awake. It's not important. It's not just awakening is not important. If you awaken and go back to sleep again, you there was merely a stirring. There really wasn't an awakening. An awakening is when you come out of bed, you fold the sheets and the bed is done, sleep time is done, and now you're awake. So you're awakened from that slumber and you no longer go back. You start leading an examined life. You see things as they are, and the inner intelligence is challenged from moment to moment to see things as they are and to put forth an appropriate response, the best way you could respond to the things, not as it is expected or as I would like them, but the best way to go along. And when you do that for a while, you come to a crossroads where the old ways collide with examined living. And at that point, you're not quite sure how to go, or the stakes have gone up, and you're not quite sure about how to proceed, how to walk, or how to stay the course. And it is at that point the advent of the teacher comes along. And this concludes the major portion of the first chapter. From the second chapter through the sixth, the great sage Vasishtha starts talking to Rama and lifting his understanding gradually about things, little by little, and clearing all the doubts in his mind so Rama can see things as they are and go along and lead an enlightened life. Friends, we spoke about the first chapter today. In the first chapter, we meet Rama. We meet the ideal seeker. And that Rama is not somebody from a long time ago. It's every one of us. We've all got to wake up from our unexamined ways of living and functioning to an examined way of living. In that examined way of living, we find a way by which we can live without hurting ourselves and without hurting others. By being true to our understanding of things, you cannot either hurt or cause hurt if you live an examined life, because you deal with everything in accordance with your highest understanding or wisdom of things. Now, does that mean that it may not result in hurt? Yes. Somebody may get hurt when you don't do what is expected, but you aren't the cause of their hurt. They expected something and you functioned in light of your wisdom. You didn't fulfill their expectation, you fulfilled your highest understanding or wisdom of things. That may still result in hurt, but there's a difference of something resulting in hurt, which means hurt happens, but the cause of the hurt is not you. The cause of the hurt is their expectation, and so you are free. This is a tremendous step in leading an enlightened life, or a life that's guided by your wisdom or your true understanding of things. And the fear that we have is we feel caught, my friends, that we are the cause of that person's sorrow. Well, you may not be the cause of that person. It may be their own expectations. When you live an enlightened life, you are free from all of that. Your highest wisdom is challenged and empowered. Now, in the next chapter, the great sage Vasishtha starts his discourse. And there are some question and answers that go forth. We won't be looking at the question and answers, the scenarios, the examples or illustrations of the sage Vasishtha, because we don't have time. And we'll focus purely on the teachings, on what was said, and leave it for you to consider how that could play a role in your life. Friends, thank you for joining me today in the beginning of our journey of Vasishtha's teachings. To download this video, its audio, or main points in PDF, kindly visit suryadevananda.org. Thank you.